Okay, so I'm going to be reading a lot, and then we'll discuss some things too. So, Om Gana Timidandasya Dhananjana Shilakaya Chakshuru Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, first of all, before we start this, I want to offer my thanks to the different devotees and computer programs that helped me put together this information. First of all, to Bhakti Churumaraj, who put together a Vaishnava etiquette seminar, and I used a lot of his quotes from this. Also to the devotees at Chopati, who put together a Vaishnava etiquette booklet, and I used a lot of their information. And also to Sumuk. Also to... I think it's just... That's good. And also to the devotees who put together the database, because I used a lot of information from there. So I'm going to be reading some because we have a lot of quotes from Srila Prabhupada. First of all, we're going to define what etiquette is. Does anyone have an idea what etiquette is? You know, because we're talking about Vaishnava etiquette, so we should understand what etiquette is. I think you all know what a Vaishnava is, right? You know, what's a Vaishnava? No one knows. A devotee of Vishnu, but actually a Vaishnava is one who has good behavior and speaks nicely. Two things. Vaishnav, what we're going to talk about is Vaishnav achar, Vaishnav behavior, or sometimes called sadachar. This thing is just, it's balancing on that. I can see myself tipping it over. That's it. That's the way you do it. So, a Vaishnava, of course, is a devotee, but a devotee is one who is devoted and one who has good behavior, as well as one who knows the philosophy. It's called Vaishnavachar. So a lot of this information we're going to be giving you this evening comes from the Goswamis of Vrindavan. The Goswamis of Vrindavan were instructed to do a lot of things like excavate the holy places, write books on Sat-Dharma, Samstapako, like you know, Lokanam Hitakarano, Chibhuvane, Manyo Sharanya Karo, as Srinivasacharya wrote. In other words, to establish eternal religious principles. And in addition to that, they were told to write books establishing Vaishnava behavior. And in addition, they were told to show Vaishnava behavior by their example and teach others by that Vaishnava behavior. So let me read something from the Chaitanya Charitamrita about Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami. And Sanatana Goswami, of course, was the one who compiled one of the most important texts. It's easier if I just sit here, because I'm going to start slipping if I sit on that thing. He compiled one of the most important texts on Vaishnava behavior, which is called the what? Hari Bhakti Vilash. Sanatana Goswami also compiled Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is the foundational text for the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, upon which the other Goswamis built their particular literatures, the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. But he, along with Gopal Bhatta Goswami, compiled the Hari Bhakti Vilas, which elaborates on Vaishnava behavior. Now, one point about the Hari Bhakti Vilas, it's important to understand is that some of the injunctions there do not apply to us, because the Hari Bhakti Vilas was written also with the idea of attracting people who were ritualistic brahmanas to Krishna consciousness. So you'll find many injunctions in there. For example, you should not eat carrots. And we, of course, eat carrots. Srila Prabhupada ate carrots. And so those injunctions are time, place, and circumstance injunctions. How do we know which ones are and which ones are not? by the example of the Acharya, Srila Prabhupada. I mean, you'll find many injunctions in the Vedic literatures that we don't follow because they just don't fit in time, place, and circumstance. In the Bhagavatam, it says that the grahastha, actually the vanaprastha, should wear tree bark. And I haven't run into any vanaprasthas wearing tree bark yet. So Prabhupada adjusts things, some of the external things. So really we need guru, shastra, and sadhu to understand Vaishnava behavior. So here's the quote from the Madhya Lila. Folding his hands, Sanatana Goswami said, "My Lord, you ordered me to write a directory about the activities of Vaishnavas. I am a low-born person. I have no knowledge of good behavior. How is it possible for me to write authorized directions about Vaishnava activities?" Sanatana Goswami then requested the Lord, "Please tell me how I can write this difficult book about Vaishnava behavior. Please manifest yourself in my heart. If you would please manifest yourself within my heart and personally direct me in writing this book, then although I am low-born, I may hope to be able to write it. You can do this because you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead yourself, and whatever you direct is perfect." And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, "Whatever you want to do, you will be able to do correctly by Lord Krishna's favor." And anybody who finds me going too fast for them, just slow me down, because I have that tendency to say slow. Anyway, my mind goes very fast. He will manifest, that is, Lord Krishna will manifest the real purport. "Because you asked me for a synopsis, please hear these few indications. In the beginning, you must take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. In your book, there should be characteristics of the bona fide spiritual master and bona fide disciple. Therefore, before accepting a spiritual master, one can be assured of the spiritual master's position. Similarly, the spiritual master can also be assured of the disciple's position. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna should be described as the worshipable object, and you should consider the Bija mantra for worship of Krishna, Ram, or any other expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." And I'm going to summarize this. I'm not going to read the whole quote. But he says, "You should discuss the purification of the mantra, initiation, mourning duties, remembrance of the Supreme Lord, cleanliness, washing the mouth and other parts of the body. In the morning," this is sort of a summary, "in the morning one should regularly brush his teeth, take his bath, offer prayers to the Lord, and offer obeisances to the spiritual master. One should render service to the spiritual master and paint one's body in 12 places with tilak. One should put the holy names of the Lord on his body, or one should stamp the symbols of the Lord, such as disc and club. After this, you should describe how one should decorate his body with gopi chandan, wear neck beads, collect tulsi leaves from the tulsi tree, cleanse his cloth in the altar, cleanse one's own house and apartment, and go to the temple. Ring the bell just to draw the attention of Lord Krishna. Also describe deity worship, wherein one should offer food to Krishna at least 5 times a day. One should in due place Krishna on a bed. You should also describe the process for offering arti and the worship of the Lord according to the 5, 16, or 50 ingredients. The characteristics of the deity should be discussed, as well as the characteristics of the Shalagram Shila. One should also discuss visiting the deities in the temple and touring the holy places like Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka." And we're going to discuss all these items. Not the item about worshiping the Shalagram Shila, but the regular Vaishnava etiquette like visiting the holy places, which is very interesting. "You should glorify the holy name and carefully give up offenses when chanting the holy name. You should know the symptoms of a Vaishnava. One must give up or nullify all kinds of seva aparada, that is, offenses and deity worship." And then he describes the items of worship that are offered to the deity. And then he describes the method of purascharana, purification. That means before one actually takes initiation, one goes through a period of chanting 16 rounds, like Prabhupada did in his system of initiation. And then you take initiation. Taking Krishna prasad, we're going to discuss that. Giving up unoffered food, and not blaspheming the Lord's devotees. We're going to discuss that too. You should describe the ritualistic activities of every day, and you should describe the fortnightly duties, especially observing a Ekadasi fast, which comes every fortnight. You should recommend the avoidance of mixed Ekadasi and the performance of pure Ekadasi. Mixed Ekadasi is when you have 2 days, 2 lunar days mixed in the same solar day. And when that happens, and actually happens this week, Friday is actually Ekadasi, and Saturday, I think, is Mahadwadasi, right? So Friday, which is Ekadasi, is a mixed day. We're not supposed to fast on that day. We're supposed to fast on the Mahadwadasi. So that's what Lord Chaitanya is talking about. And then he, let's see, we'll summarize this. You should talk about establishment of Vaishnava temples and deities, the behavior and activities of a Vaishnava. All this should be described as regulations and etiquette. And we're going to describe what etiquette is in a second. And he said, my dear Sanatan, although you are the deliverer of the entire universe, and although even the demigods and great saints are purified by touching you, it is the characteristic of a devotee to observe and protect the Vaishnava etiquette. Maintenance of the Vaishnava etiquette is the ornament of a devotee. And there's another reference from the Anchalila, that if one transgresses the laws of etiquette, people make fun of him, and thus he is vanquished both in this world and in the next. So then there's more glorification, which we're going to read in a second, of etiquette in general. But let's describe what etiquette is. Etiquette is behavior according to a specific culture. Got that? That's a dictionary definition. Like, if you are born in Europe, then part of your etiquette training is to use the right fork for eating meat. Sounds strange. And the right spoon for eating your cake or whatever. You know, you're actually trained like that from birth. And so we have, in our culture, items of etiquette, but our items of etiquette are not relative. In other words, they're not based upon what culture we happen to be in, but they're based upon some spiritual understanding connecting us with God and primarily developing the mode of goodness. This is very important. Because in order to become Krishna conscious, we have to be situated in the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness in and of itself is not enough to get you back to Godhead, but it's a requirement. As they say in logic, it's a necessary requirement, but it's not sufficient. And the example I give sometimes in that regard is if you want to fly to New Zealand, you have to go to the airport. Most cases, unless you happen to have mystic powers and you could fly without an airplane. But generally, you have to go to the airport. So that's a necessary requirement. But there are a lot of people who go to the airport who don't fly. So simply becoming or situated in the mode of goodness will not get you back to Godhead. However, it is required to do it as a prerequisite. So etiquette situates you like that. In addition, it attracts people to Krishna consciousness. So it's not only a personal thing that I'm going to follow good etiquette so that I can develop the mode of goodness and go back to God and all that other nice stuff. But people will be attracted because, as Srila Prabhupada said, that his disciples are perfect gentlemen when he was asked about the quality of his followers and disciples. And people will respect us very much if we have the proper manners. Now, sometimes, just another point about etiquette, is that we have to follow etiquette of a particular society that we're in, too. Not only do we have Vaishnava etiquette, where we offer obeisances at a certain time, clean our hands, but we're also in a particular society, either here, Fiji, or New Zealand, Australia, America, where there's other items of etiquette, like shaking hands. You understand? Shaking hands and saying bula to people. I mean, you won't read about bula in the Vaishnava literature. However, if you meet someone on the street and he says, bula, bula, you say, bula, bula, back to him. And that's an item of etiquette. So in other words, you follow ordinary etiquette insofar as it does not contradict Vaishnava etiquette. It's an important point. It's not that we have our Vaishnava etiquette, you all are a bunch of malaches, and we don't have to do anything you do. We can steal, we can cheat, we can step on your toes, we're the devotees and we couldn't be prouder, and if you don't like it, we're going to chant a little louder. That's our mantra. So that's not proper. Okay? So now we're going to read some of the benefits of following Vaishnava etiquette. This is all part of the introduction. Since nothing can be successful without sadachar or etiquette, every action, in other words, nothing can be successful. This is from Srila Prabhupada's books. Every action should be performed with proper etiquette. If a person reads the six branches of the Vedas without practicing proper etiquette, he does not get purified. Just as a bird flies away from the nest, as soon as it grows wings, the Vedas leave him at the time of his death. So even if someone's very educated, all the Vedic knowledge and all the rituals and everything like that, if he doesn't follow Vaishnava etiquette, all of his knowledge is lost, and he gets no benefit. Although one might, here's another quote from Prabhupada, although one may have acquired the knowledge of all the Vedas, but if one is not practicing the proper etiquette, or if he did not become a Vaishnava, then all of his knowledge which he has acquired will be lost at the time of death. And here's something that will attract all of you. Proper etiquette increases fame, opulence, longevity, and destroys all inauspiciousness. So if you want to be famous, rich, a good motivation, right? Then you should have good etiquette. And here's another one that's very encouraging, if we have some material desire. O King, proper etiquette gives the results of Dharma, Artha, and Kama. Therefore, a wise man very carefully performs the proper etiquette described in scriptures. Another one is, thus one can understand that Vaishnava etiquette purifies the heart and the consciousness. Here's another quote. Srila Prabhupada was asked one time, how do you recognize a Vaishnava? And Prabhupada replied, he's a perfect gentleman. That's what I said already. And there's a famous verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Apane acharye ke na kare prachar. Prachar karena keha na karena achar. Some behave very well but do not preach the cult of Krishna consciousness, whereas others preach but do not behave nicely. You simultaneously perform both activities. This is spoken to Haridas Thakur. In relation to the holy name by your personal behavior and by your preaching. Therefore, you are the most advanced devotee in the world. And so, now I'm just going to read some basic things that come from the Hari Bhakti Vilas. And we're going to go over many of these things in detail later. But just, these are, let's say we're pulling these out of the Hari Bhakti Vilas and the Nectar of Devotion. There's, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, there's about 45 items. We'll read them quickly and we'll get into them later in greater detail. The one is offer respects and obeisances to the Guru. And also respectable superiors. Two, and some of these may be difficult for you all to hear, get up before 4 a.m. That's an item of etiquette. Interesting, isn't it? Why is that? Actually, there's astrological statements that if you get up an hour and a half before the sunrise, that's Brahma Muhurta, then you'll become successful in life. And you'll find, interestingly enough, the very successful people in the material world, they're always getting up early. You will not find a super rich man who made the money himself who gets up at 8 o'clock in the morning. It just doesn't happen. You may find an ordinary person who makes a nice salary, but if someone wants to be successful in anything, you get up early. And the reason you get up early for Krishna consciousness is because it helps you cultivate the mode of goodness, much easier to chant, much easier to study. And Krishna is pleased. That's why we have our Mangal Arti. Anyone's heard of Mangal Arti here? Does anyone know what Mangal Arti means? What does Mangal mean? Auspicious. Auspicious. It makes your whole day auspicious. Prabhupada said if you chant 13 rounds before like 9:30 in the morning, you won't have anxiety the rest of the day. How many people here have anxiety? Nobody's truthful. Okay. And how many of you chant 13 rounds before 9 o'clock in the morning? and you still have anxiety. That's because you're doing the Temple Brooks. I mean, that's... Oh, you don't have anxiety. Okay. I mean, managing an ISKCON, you'll be in anxiety whether or not you get up at any time in the morning. So that's a different subject matter. But in any case, Prabhupada said that 9:30 you get at least 13 rounds done, and you feel really good and Krishna conscious. And I've experienced, and we were mentioning yesterday at the initiation, that when I've chanted 64 rounds, then nothing bothers me. I mean, it's just like, it's just Krishna, you know. Everything, whoa, you don't see anything. You just see Krishna. So it's a time for meditating on Krishna. It's not a time for doing business. Okay, so that's an item of etiquette, to get up before 4 a.m. And simple things like brushing your teeth, going to the bathroom, washing with water, etc. These are all simple things that everybody should be doing. And washing hands, feet, and mouth before and after taking prasadam, at least your hands. Wash your hands after drinking water. You all do this. These are all easy things. Using the right hand for eating and drinking. Always wear clean clothes. Never steal anything. That may sound strange, but probably there's a quote later on, I'll read about that, where the devotees, anyway, they were thinking of stealing things. And I've seen a lot of things in the movement where devotees talked about transcendental trickery, lying, but actually the next one is never tell a lie, even if it is pleasant. Even if it's a white lie, it'll make your life easier. You know, if you're speaking to your wife or your husband, don't tell it. Do not become inimical to others. Do not develop friendship with people who are envious, fallen, and insane. Phew. Inimical, extravagant, deceptive, lying, or engaged in illicit activities. Don't develop friends. You may be very sentimental, you know. Like we get sentimental sometimes, isn't it? We see, oh, this poor person, he's lying, or he's creating problems for the movement. We have to help him. But better, don't make friends. Just keep them at a distance. You know, we can pray for everybody. Do not sneeze or yawn without covering the mouth. Do not laugh loudly. Do not pass air loudly. Do not take shelter of a fallen person. Don't sleep too much or stay awake too much. Don't stretch your legs in front of your elders. Do not spit while eating. Do not insult women. Very important. Do not become envious of women. Never cause harm to anyone. Do not associate. You'll get time to write all this down later on because I'm going to go over these points. This is just a summary. Do not associate with unscrupulous persons or read scriptures that are not bona fide. Do not mock people who are fallen, insane, distressed, ugly, cunning, lame, or fallen. Do not chastise anyone except for sons and disciples. Great. I got a lot of people to chastise. No, in other words, unless you have the... It has to be according to etiquette. Like if you're a temple president, sometimes you have to chastise people. But these are like your sons. In other words, the people who you're chastising, you should see them like your sons or daughters. You shouldn't see them as your enemies. Do not hit anyone on the head or pull anyone by the hair. That's what it says. I mean, like children, sometimes you can just like tap them on the head and like that. So it's just when dealing with people. Do not eat yogurt or chickpea flour at night. Why? Because it causes bad dreams. It's too much passion. If someone insults you, leave the place silently. Never praise yourself. Never look at a naked woman or man. And here's one that I see devotees do quite a bit. Do not place your foodstuffs on your lap to eat. In other words, don't put your plate on the lap. It's not proper. You're not also, it doesn't say here, and we'll go over it later on, but you're not supposed to eat while you're standing. And another item, it's not mentioned here, is don't eat while people are looking at you enviously or looking at your food enviously, because you can get sick. Here's another one that's going to be quite hard for some of you. Do not quarrel with your wife. That's there. It's not that the ladies actually paid me to put this here. This is actually Sanatana Goswami writing. So you ladies, you can use this. We'll give you a big poster later on and put it in your house. No, they should quarrel with their husband. Do not spit on water. Do not sleep in the temple room. And there's going to be exceptions to that if one's guarding the deities at night. But also, it's not mentioned here, but I'll mention it. When one sleeps, one should, if they're sleeping on the floor, for example, we learn that as brahmacharis, they clean up the space that they were sleeping on. And it's also regard to prasadam. Sannyasis should bathe three times a day, grahasthas and brahmacharis at least twice a day. And here's one. After one takes prasadam, where the plate was kept must be cleared. In other words, your responsibility. I see sometimes devotees eating and they just take the plate, clean the plate, but they don't clean the table, and they leave it up to some other devotee to clean the table, right? So it's the end of, we were taught that in the prasadam room in the beginning days of the movement. They always had a tub with a cloth in it with water, and we would scrub because we would eat on the floor. That was the beginning days of the movement. I don't think you do that anymore. And we would... And sometimes we were criticized for that. I remember my mother came the first time I joined the temple, and she saw me eating on the floor, and she freaked out. Not only that, I was so dedicated to prasadam at that time that by accident I spilled the water, and it was prasadam water. So then I got down on my hands and knees and started to lick it up. And I'm, can you imagine, right on the floor licking up water. Because I thought, this is Krishna prasad. I had so much faith in prasad. I didn't want it to be on the floor. And my mother was looking. She said, my son, what have they done to him? He was so educated, he could have been a doctor. And now he's licking the floor. So, we don't want to be fanatic about these things. And, of course, you don't step over prasadam. So the place where you eat is contaminated, and if you step on that spot, you have to wash your feet. And so also after touching the inside of your mouth and nose, you wash your hands. And after putting on tilak, one should do achman by saying Om Keshavaya Namaha, Om Narayanaya Namaha. That's the tilak mantras. Om Madhavaya Namaha, etc. In other words, when you put on tilak, you shouldn't just like that. You should say the mantras for putting it on, because otherwise it's like war paint. Because it becomes spiritual when you say the mantras. And Lord Chaitanya would refuse to see devotees without tilak. He would say, your face looks like a crematorium. I'm not going to look at everybody's face now, but there's some crematoriums out there in the audience. So, okay, that's the general description. And first, we're going to start with temple room etiquette. I think that's an important item. In other words, we're going to talk about how to see the deities, the methodology of seeing the deities, how to dress in the temple room, what to do in the temple room, how to speak in the temple room, what not to say in the temple room. And we're going to explain this utilizing Srila Prabhupada's quotes and other references that I've written down. So Prabhupada said in a letter to this devotee, Nandarani, and Krishna Devi in 1967, another thing I request is that everything in the temple should be kept nice and clean. Everyone should wash hands before touching anything of Krishna's. We should always remember that Krishna is the purest, and similarly only the purest can associate with him. Cleanliness is next to godliness. Here's another letter that Prabhupada wrote to Jamuna Devi in 1970. There is no matter if there is little change here and there, the real duty is love and devotion. And here's about cooking standards in the temple. Regarding the prasadam, I never approve Mr. Malkani cooking in the temple. He is not initiated. Of course he is a Hindu, but he is not initiated to cook in the temple. Any paid cook is not desirable. The independent cooking in the temple is not good. Basically, Prabhupada was indicating that twice initiated Brahmins should cook over the fire. And in addition, you're talking about this paid business. There's another quote later on that I came across where Prabhupada said, Brahmins and Kshatriyas should not be paid salaries. I mean, they can get some allowance for their needs as they're working in the temple, but no one should get paid a salary for serving Krishna, a regular salary. Prabhupada was very much against that, and Los Angeles, they were paying salaries to devotees, and Prabhupada tried to stop that. So, okay, that's a letter to Kirtananda. But Prabhupada also said a non-initiate can work under the direction of a devotee in the kitchen. As long as they're a devotee, even if they're not initiated, they can't cook over the fire, but they can help. They can cook, clean, they can cut, they can do other things like that. So in the temples in India, here's another quote. It is customary for the priests of temples in India to not even touch outsiders nor enter the deity room after having been touched. This is a very important item in temple worship. And in this temple, and in your home temple it's a little bit different, but in this temple we should observe these items of cleanliness as far as who goes in the kitchen. If they've been to the stool room, they should take a bath, change their clothes. There was one story of a devotee, I think it was Damodar Pandit, if I remember correctly, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, who would be offering coconuts every day to the deities. And what happened is one time his servant, when he was taking the coconuts to the deity room, he happened to touch the top of the doorway. And he said to that servant, throw away the coconuts and go get some new ones. And the reason for that was that he said the wind or the breeze or the air is carrying the dust from people's feet up to the doorway or the top of the doorway. So he was such a fanatic about cleanliness. Prabhupada said about deity worship, cleanliness and punctuality are the two most important items. Everything has to be, as Srila Prabhupada said, revolutionary clean. Not just in the temple, but any part of the deity's property. Because all the deity's property is a manifestation of Balaram or Sankarshan. Everybody understands that? For Sankarshan supports the temple. He is the Sankarshan is in charge, or Balaram is in charge of the Sandini potency. There's the Samvit, Sandini, and Ladini potencies. Ladini, of course, that is Srimati Radharani, and Sankarshana Balaram. He supports the temple. He's the Singhasana. He's the Lord's Brahman thread. And everything we see here can be considered to be an expansion of Sankarshana, even the stage I'm sitting on. And so it must be taken care of in that light. And sometimes I see that devotees take care of their homes better than they take care of Krishna's temple. And there should be this mood of service. And I was just told, today we were in the car, and we were told that these devotees who visited from overseas, I think that one was from Brazil, another one was from somewhere else, and they were found in the pot room cleaning the pots, right? Does anyone remember that? Sugriva? And the devotees were so amazed. How come you were in the pot room cleaning the pots? Because they had this mood of service. They understood it was Krishna's. And oftentimes we forget that. When I was a new devotee, one of my favorite activities was cleaning Krishna's pots. And we'd scrub them so much they would shine. Prabhupada said that even if there's some black mark on the bottom of the pot, it's not clean. You know, like the soot, it's not clean. So we scrub it so practically you could see yourself in the reflection on the pot. So there's cleanliness. But you'll only be enthusiastic about being clean if you can understand that the temple and all the paraphernalia belongs to Krishna and it's a manifestation of Sankarshan. So, all right. So here's what you do when you go in a temple. First of all, you offer obeisances. Everybody got that? That's Nama-Om stuff. Nama-Om Vishnupadaya, depending on who you're offering obeisances to. But when you take darshan of the deities, you don't walk up to them and say, hi, Krishna, here I am. You know, you with a friend, you do that. Let's say if I walk up to Rupanuga, I say, hi, Rupanuga. But with the deities, you look at what first? The feet. And actually, first you approach the guru in the temple, Srila Prabhupada. You go to this Vyasa-san, and you offer obeisances. And then you take darshan, and you look at the feet first. And Prabhupada says here, the process of meditation should begin from the lotus feet of the Lord and progress to the smiling face. The meditation should be concentrated upon the lotus feet, then the calves, then the thighs, and in this way, higher and higher. And that's the process of arti, too. You do arti beginning at the feet in a circle. The more the mind becomes fixed upon the different parts of the limbs, one after another, the more the intelligence becomes purified, Srila Prabhupada said. So if you begin from the feet, it's like reading the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the lotus feet of the Lord. And then you become qualified, ultimately, to approach the tenth canto, which contains the intimate mood of Krishna's Rasa Leela and other pastimes in Vrindavan. And the proper mood we should have when we go in the temple is, I am your servant. What can I do for you? Not, Krishna, entertain me. It's, Krishna, please tell me what I can do. Not that I want something, here's my request, Krishna. Okay. And then once you're in the temple room, you offer obeisances to the deities. On, you have your left side to the deities. And the reason you do that is, the tradition is, the left side is for God, the right side is for the demigods. Understand? So if you want, if you enter a temple of the demigods, then you offer obeisances to Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Ganesh, on your right side. But obeisances to Radha and Krishna, Gaur Nitai, Sitaram Lakshman, Hanuman, on your left side. And then as far as sitting in the temple room, there's etiquette about that too. Especially you don't want to put your feet out like this towards the other devotees. I'm committing offense by doing that. But anyway, so you don't want to put your feet out towards the deities, towards the other devotees, towards the Vyasa-san. You don't want to put your back to the deities or to the Vyasa-san. You don't want to spread your legs before Krishna. You don't want to hold your ankles. A lot of this stuff is in nectar devotion, too. Your ankles or your knees, and you don't want to fall asleep in front of the deities. And that happens quite often, too. So in other words, you're in the consciousness. These are all specifics, but they follow the consciousness. The consciousness is you are seeing God. You are in the hall of God. If you went to see even the prime minister here, you wouldn't put your feet out like that before. I don't think so. You'd be running around the army camp a few times. Doing push-ups, right? So, but even the prime minister or any important person, or when you went to see some ambassador from an embassy, you wouldn't do that to him. You sit very nicely with him, straight back, like that, and you have a nice relationship. So the same thing with Krishna. But that's sitting. And then also in the temple room, there's a talking injunctions or restrictions. Don't talk loudly. And we're going to get to how to chant and dance too in a second. Some of you may not like that. Don't praise anyone other than Krishna and the pure devotees of Krishna. Don't quarrel, don't chastise, don't speak harshly or roughly with anybody. No ill names, don't criticize the demigods, don't tell prajalpa, and don't tell a lie. And traditionally in the villages, when there was some disagreement between people, they would settle the disagreement by going before the deities. And people would be too scared to tell a lie. Don't disturb devotees who are chanting and reading, and don't touch the devotees with one's feet. And I see that quite often when it's very crowded, devotees will just push or touch each other with their feet. We mentioned the other day the feet are just meant for walking. Don't use them for anything else. You're not a monkey. You know, monkeys can, you understand, they can grab, they can eat a banana with their feet. So don't do that. Don't touch the, and if you have to have a path through people, you go like this or something like that. So people understand and they move out of the way. Another important item, and I noticed that here and in many temples that Srila Prabhupada criticized the devotees for, was the slamming of doors. I've seen that here sometimes too, people slam doors. So Prabhupada got very angry. Here's a quote from the Lilamrita. Prabhupada said, it symptomized carelessness and misuse, and Prabhupada said the sound cracked his heart. One time Prabhupada came out of the room and called out, who is slamming the doors? No one knows from where this building has come. You take it for granted it is here, but no one cares. So it's causing, it actually cracks the ether. You know what the ether is? The ether is something very subtle. And when you crack the ether can be cracked but also by whistling or other sharp noises. It creates an inauspicious atmosphere, and another thing, the ghosts can come. Did you know that? There's ghosts that are here, and if you do things in the mode of ignorance or you crack the ether, then it creates a very inauspicious mood and vibration in the air. Okay? And then the next item is the devotee's dress. How to dress. Of course, simple and clean. We are not in the Vaishnava etiquette book I was reading from Chalpati. They said everybody has to wear a dhoti. So, but that's also a dhoti or a sari. But that's also in relationship to the culture there. So here I understand that sometimes devotees, they're going to work after the morning program, and they may have to wear nice pants or whatever. But it should be something, the principle is respectability. I see that oftentimes people take the ritual or understand the ritual, but not the principle behind it. The principle is neat and clean. And respectable dress. In other words, you don't want to come in the temple room before the deities wearing your shorts. I've seen that. You wear Western clothes, that's fine, but make sure they're clean, make sure they're nice, they're well-pressed. That's fine. We're not demanding that everybody wears a dhoti or a sari. In Chalpati, they do. They're very strict about that. And as far as tilak, I mentioned before, we have to have tilak on our bodies. And the sika, everybody should have a sika, even the grihasthas. We should do a check after this. They can have, Prabhupada said, gentleman's hair. When I joined the movement, it was the fashion to have very long shoulder-length hair. Even the businessmen, they were all wearing shoulder-length hair. And Prabhupada didn't want that. When Prabhupada saw the devotees letting their hair grow, he said, those are hippie seeds. They're growing again. And even when the devotees went on Sankirtan in the airport, they would wear these wigs, and the wigs would be shoulder-length wigs. I mean, it's hard to imagine. It's a different culture now, a different mood or mode now. But Prabhupada said, even if they have gentleman's haircut, like Rupanuga is a gentleman's haircut, they should have some sort of sika. And the sika, unless it's real short like mine, it should be tied. Because the only time you untie a sika is when? What's that? No, shower, but another time too. What? When you're lamenting, when someone dies in your family. That's a sign. Or like the women have their hair untied, the same thing. When there's a death in the family, you're lamenting about some unfortunate thing that just occurred. So, or if you have a real short sika, I can't really tie mine, it just comes undone. And you should not braid a sika. I've seen some of the brahmacharis. You know what braiding is? They braid a sika, make it look like a lady's pigtail, ponytail. It should... How long? It should be, I'm going to describe, it should be about this big around. Probably. No, it can be long. It can be all the way down to here if you want. If you still have the capability of doing that at your age. Length is not a problem. But it should be, Prabhupada said, any bigger than this, he said several centimeters like that, then it's another sampradaya. Like in South India, you'll see people with sikhas like this, covering the head. I mean, that's all right. It's fine. We don't criticize them for that, but it's another sampradaya. Our Gaudiya sampradaya is like this. In America, we say the size of a quarter or something like that, or a half dollar. That's it. What? Inch and a half. Yeah, inch and a half. Well, Prabhupada says several. He used centimeters, 5 to 6 centimeters. Yeah, it shouldn't be bigger. Otherwise, it's another sampradaya. But even the grahasthas, they can fold it in so their patients don't get too upset. Everyone should have a sikha. And of course, as far as tilak is concerned, we understand if you have to work in the workplace, it may not be the most favorable thing for your workplace. So there's this thing called water tilak. You know, you put it on with water in the morning, you mark your body with water. And it's very important. And people ask a question, when they see you wearing tilak, they say, what is that, what it's for? It's a conversation opener. I found it's very helpful when preaching Krishna consciousness. What's that for? What's the bead bag for? What's the sikha for? What's the tilak for? Especially people like the sikha. I've had a lot of people come up and say, hey, that's cool. What does that mean? You know. Especially, well, in America, you go, in our black population, they like it. They call it a rat tail. So we should keep the Vaishnava dress. And in addition, there are several restrictions, too. Of course, there's a kanti mala, too. Kanti mala is the neck, the mala around the neck. And in America, they don't know how to pronounce it. They say kunti mala. You ever hear devotees say that? Do you have any kunti mala? That means... that means something that Queen Kunti wore or something like that. But it's kanti. Kanti means neck in Sanskrit. And so if it's going to cause a disturbance at your workplace, let it hang low. But everyone should wear that because it protects you against Yamaraj. And we know we need all the protection we can get from Yamaraj. In addition, Prabhupada very much stressed that his disciples should be clean shaven. That is, no mustaches or beards. And I'm not looking around. You know, I don't want to see anybody with mustaches or beards, especially not the ladies. So, no mustaches or beards. Prabhupada said, anyone who has a mustache or beard is not my disciple. Because he's against the principle. Now, the principle is obedience to the spiritual master. The mustache or disciple thing is not the important issue, but it's Prabhupada's order that's the important issue. Because you'll find in other Gaudiya moths or other Gaudiya organizations, they're growing beards. It's not that they were doing anything wrong. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself had a beard during the Chaturmasya period, and he's performing austerities. And he also did a lot of other things, like when devotees wanted to grow their beards during Chaturmasya, Prabhupada said you have to do the rest of everything too. Eat once a day, unspiced food, boiled, and you have to eat your food like a duck. In other words, you bow down without your hands behind your back, put your face to the floor, and when you get up, that's all you are allowed to eat for the whole day. So if you want to grow a beard, go ahead and follow all those injunctions. But Prabhupada wanted his devotees to be clean shaven. And also that was because of the hippie revolution that was going on at that time, where basically, including myself, you know, people joined the movement and they had beards and mustaches. So that is a very important principle. Another item of Vaishnava dress is not to wear anything that is a product of a slaughterhouse, like shoes, pocketbooks, wallets. What else do people have? What? Belts. Prabhupada said, it's very nice that you have this technology where you can produce the same thing using artificial materials. I know when I go shopping, recently I just went shopping for a new pair of sneakers, and I had to just go through all the labels very, very carefully to see what the uppers and lowers of the shoe are made of. And sometimes you have to spend a lot of time finding the right thing. So very, very, be very, very careful. Here's a funny story that Prabhupada told about an episode of a Vaishnava who insisted on wearing tilak in a Muslim factory. So it shows your determination pays off in wearing Vaishnava dress. Once upon a time, there was a factory in India where all the workers were Hindus and mostly Vaishnavas. The Vaishnavas had freedom, and they were wearing their Vaishnav tilak to work. But they also displayed other Vaishnav paraphernalia. But after some time, the factory was sold into a new management. And then the proprietor became a Muslim. Upon taking over the business, the Muslim owner declared that he would not allow the workers to come to work anymore wearing Vaishnav tilak. Most of the workers obeyed, and on the given date announced by the owner, they appeared at the factory without their tilak. One employee, however, thought that he would take his chances and depend on Krishna. So he went to work wearing very clear white Vaishnav tilak. After seeing all the workers assembled, the new Muslim proprietor said, "This one devotee who has worn Vaishnav tilak is very courageous. He may be permitted to continue wearing the tilak to work, but all others are forbidden to wear it anymore." So in other words, we have to have a little courage. Of course, we don't want to lose our jobs. We don't want to just risk ourselves, but we shouldn't worry about what other people think of us. Another example Prabhupada gave of why we shouldn't worry about what other people think of us. One time they were walking in Vrindavan and people were, using the fields for their bathroom stuff. And Prabhupada said, look, they don't worry about what people think about them. So we should not worry. You know, we're so self-conscious, you know, about reputation, what people think about us. I mean, even today, I was with Sumuk and we went in to see this computer guy. And I was wearing a dhoti. I had no problem with that. But I was thinking, Sumuk's wearing a dhoti. And he's actually, the way he got in to see the computer guy, he said he was working with FEA. So I said, what are they going to think? An FEA guy was in charge of procurement. Going in a dhoti? And he said, don't worry. Anyway, everything worked out well. But sometimes we become a little nervous about it, don't we? I mean, one of the only times I don't wear a dhoti is when I'm going through security in America at the airports. Because at that point, they want to put their hands over every portion of your body because of the high security there. And I feel very much abused when they do that. So that's one reason I don't do that. And also when I ride a bicycle. Otherwise, because dhotis have a habit of getting tangled in the gears. So, otherwise, we should wear dhotis whenever possible. There's nothing wrong with them. And when Prabhupada was asked, why do you wear dhotis and why do you shave your head? Prabhupada said, it's to be clean and simple. We believe in simple living, high thinking, and also we believe in having cool heads. And Prabhupada pointed out a lady who had her dress was up to here or something like that. And Prabhupada said, we believe in having cool heads and warm legs. And the poor lady started turning colors when Prabhupada said that. Not hot. In other words, he was saying, you have a hot head and cool legs. The opposite of what we want to do. So it's 8:15 right now. I'm supposed to go to 8:15. So anyone have any questions? And tomorrow we'll continue. We're less than a third through, but there's a lot of different items such as prasadam, receiving guests, important things that I want to make points about in regard to this temple too. You know, receiving guests, eating prasadam, interacting with superiors, interacting with inferiors, being a host in your house, being a host in the temple. There's many important things we have to cover tomorrow. And the next day. So any questions or comments? It's a nice turnout tonight. Yes, such a matter.
Why did you mention about not stealing?
Not stealing.
And sometimes we see that devotees
We'll get to that tomorrow. I have some quotes. I have some quotes we probably talked about not stealing. But interestingly enough, I'll tell you a funny story. In the beginning days of the movement, all of our flowers were stolen. So we would go out at 3 o'clock in the morning before Mangal Arati and go to people, you know, wherever we could find flowers. I'll tell you a funny story after this. But anyway, so we would go. One time we went to the, you know what a fire station is? You know what you call it brigades, a fire brigade or something like that here? So we had, you know, all the big trucks and everything like that. It was a big place, and they had some beautiful flowers there, so we were sneaking in. And it was about 3:30 in the morning, and all of a sudden the sirens come on and the lights. You know, they have all these bright lights, and here we are, you know, in our dhotis like this in the field. And these big, you know, firemen are not small people usually. And they come out, "What are you doing here?" "Well, we're picking flowers for Krishna." He said, "Do you have permission?" And then, of course, we were so bold then. You know, Krishna's God, he owns all this. And you think you're the proprietor? Krishna says in the Gita, you know, Bhaktaram Jagatapasam Sarvalokitesham. They didn't appreciate that very much. And another time, when Prabhupada came, we wanted to get lotus flowers for Srila Prabhupada. So the only place where they had lotus flowers was in this lake called Lake Alice. And Lake Alice was filled with alligators. So we had to steal the lotus flowers. So I was swimming with the alligators, stealing lotus flowers for Srila Prabhupada. Anyway, I didn't get bit. That's another story. So, yeah, stealing is very... We should not steal. It will actually destroy the reputation of our society. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. The only person who can steal is Krishna. He can steal your heart, and he can steal butter. Right? Mukhanchor. But nothing else. And another point Prabhupada made about stealing, and now that we're talking about it, is that if you're stealing means basically lying to people, and if you start to lie and steal with some people, it becomes generalized to doing it with everyone. Like if I go out there and I lie to people out there, you know, the public, then I'll start doing it with the devotees. Another point is that once you are caught in a lie, nobody will trust you anymore. You've lost it. You can't win back the trust of people when they've caught you in a deliberate lie. They just won't believe you anymore. That's the way it is. So we need a person who is preaching Krishna consciousness needs the trust of people to be able to communicate Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, people will never take us seriously. If there's a spot on a white sheet, everyone will point out that spot on the white sheet. So a devotee has to be above suspicion. Okay? But there's more information about it, from quotes from Prabhupada about stealing or cheating. Any other questions or comments?
On the point Guru Maharaj, you mentioned that we should not get our back to the deities. Sometimes it is seen that during the kirtan, we are going up and down, and then the time that we...
Well, for a few seconds. I mean, we're talking about sitting or standing, you know, in a static fashion, just like that with your back to these. Obviously, if you're circumambulating, sometimes the back will go to the DDs, or if you're going back and forth. But there's also restrictions we're going to be talking about in kirtan, things you shouldn't do in kirtan. We're not going to restrict too much, don't worry. You don't have to worry. We're not going to take away your djembe drums or your wild dancing, but certain things... And I'm taking a lot of this information from Chalpati because they really understand how to employ Vaishnava etiquette. I think more than any other yatra in the world, they're the ones who are performing and practicing Vaishnava etiquette better than anyone else. Has anyone visited there? You probably have. Yeah. How were you received when you went to Chalpati? Pretty nicely? They probably treated you like a king when you went there. What? Individual attention. In Tirupati, yeah. Tirupati is another place where the brahmacharis are trained quite nicely in etiquette. And you just felt like joining them or being part of them or coming again there. So anyway, we'll get to that tomorrow. That's another item of the Vaishnava etiquette. Any other questions? Because one item of Vaishnava etiquette is to get to sleep early and wake up. So I expect to see everybody at 4 o'clock tomorrow morning. For Mangalore. What?
No excuse now.
Yeah, well, no, you don't have to be here, but at home. We'll have a camera in your home so we can check up on you. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Jai.